The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They're not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Today on the Lab Report, we're going to talk to Everest Goldstein.
Board certified psychiatric nurse practitioner and certified in functional medicine.
Is she certified enough to take care of my mental health?
Nobody is.
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
Holy pollen.
I know. This is the time of year, though.
Look.
And you're in the mountains.
This is the best time of year. But holy pollen.
Everything's green.
Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Patty Devers. How are you doing?
Are you really doing great? Because you appear to be having problems with the pollen.
Well, it's hard because how do I respond to that after I just complained about the pollen for the
That's
intro?
That's a great point.
So then I'm feeling like I can't double back and be like, I'm awesome.
I just told you, I'm terrible. Aren't you listening?
Plus, I'm terrible at lying. Anyway, this is a podcast. Welcome. It's called The Lab Report. It's brought to you by Genova Diagnostics. Thank you to Genova.
Thank you.
And it's where we talk about super fancy things like specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutics, functional precision medicine, integrative medicine. Man, you learn so much here. What should people do, Patty?
Well, first of all, if you've been following this show, you've learned all those things like Michael just said, and we're so grateful that you keep showing back up. So thank you to you. And if you're welcome, guess what? You picked a great day to show up.
And you are welcome.
You are welcome. You're welcome either way.
So lost.
It's so ridiculous. You're welcome either way. But that being said, hopefully, if you like this show, you'll go to iTunes and Spotify, perhaps follow the show, leave us some stars, rate and review, write some words in there.
You're welcome. And if you have additional feedback, you can send any feedback. Well.
Yes, anything.
Okay. That email address is podcast@gdx.net.
Yeah, and if you're a consumer out there interested in trying out Genova's products yourself, head on over to connect.gdx.net. That's Genova Connect. There you can access products yourself. We'll ship them right to your front door, and there's a promo code.
Yeah, it's called the Lab Report 20, and you can use that promo code to get 20% off anything that you would purchase on Genova Connect. That yep. can really add up. 20%.
It does, yeah.
You know, sometimes you get these discounts, you're like, well, you're really enticing me with the 5%. But like when 20%, that's a lot. That's one-fifth.
It's almost like $200 in some cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, along with the pollen, the stink bugs.
Ugh.
What's their deal, man?
I don't know.
They're terrible flyers.
They are terrible.
And they're always getting into the house. They're right. Like, and they don't know what to do. They're just lost.
And you try to get rid of them, but they just stare at you like they have a conscience. They know right from wrong. They're not moving.
Well, it's a funny thing. I don't remember them ever growing up in Indiana. I don't think we get them in Indiana.
I don't know if it's
just a southern thing, but so now the kids we call them Gary. So any stink
every
bug,
single stink
yeah,
bug is
yeah.
named
so
Gary.
It's like, Gary.
What if it's a female?
Gary.
Oh.
And look, there's a lot of Garys out there.
Okay.
And well, I mean, in stink bug land, because let's face it, there's not a lot of Garys. People aren't naming their kids Garys very much anymore.
Probably because now you're calling the stink bugs Gary, so now they're going to be associated with all the stink bugs.
I don't think I have that much power.
I don't know. I think you do. I think you're more influential than you realize.
Yeah, right. I can't even influence my own kids. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to it. Today, we have an awesome conversation with Everest Goldstein. Man, you know how excited I get when we talk about mental health.
I do.
Is like my wheelhouse, and this is perfect. This is someone who's a psychiatric nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. And certified in functional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is the best of all the worlds.
It is perfect. And it's, you know, such a nebulous topic for most people, mental health, mood disorders, psychiatric illness. And to have someone who can really start from the inside out, that functional medicine approach that we always espouse, this is going to be fantastic. I'm really excited to talk to her and meet her.
Yeah, let's do this thing. Patty Devers.
I know,
today,
Michael.
We are going to talk with Everest Goldstein. Let me tell you a little bit about Everest. So Everest Goldstein is a board-certified psychiatric nurse practitioner who's also certified in functional medicine. Everest earned her BA in psychology from Princeton University. You might have heard of it.
Heard of it.
After which she worked as a bilingual elementary school teacher, administrator, and curriculum developer. She then received her master's degree in education from Southern Methodist University in Dallas. Realizing the great need for mental health services in her community, she followed her passion and earned a psychiatric nurse practitioner degree from Vanderbilt University, then also was certified through the Institute for Functional Medicine. Through her current practice, Everest Functional Psychiatry and Wellness, Everest works to reduce the stigma surrounding mental health and expand access to care through advocacy and education. She takes a holistic approach to healing and believes in the connection between the mind and body, and that's awesome. And with that,
welcome to the Lab Report, Everest.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and chat all things mental health and functional medicine.
Love it. And I'll tell you, this is one of Michael's favorite topics. So he's super stoked and we're excited to meet you and have you here. I just want to touch on one little thing. We know that you started with a psych degree from Princeton, no less. I mean, come on. Then you moved into teaching. Tell us about the why in your transition back to psychiatry. And furthermore, how did you find functional medicine?
Yeah, really good questions, because I know it seems a little all over the place, but I don't think I ever stopped loving my, stopped loving psychology, psychiatry in general, and mental health. That's always been something that's been super important to me. One of my big passions is just mental health awareness, mental health advocacy. Even when I was teaching, well, I guess I got into teaching, I have always wanted to work with people and to be able to, you know, work with people who are in some sort of need, some sort of service related role.
Sure.
When I was teaching, I wasn't technically the special education teacher. We didn't have one of those at the time in our school, but I was actually the classroom where most of the special education students would go for the majority of the day, and really loved working with that population, looking at their specific needs in education, and then also just in terms of mental health as well, because there's such a mental health piece there. So when I decided to kind of transition into healthcare, it was really no question that I was going to go into psychiatry. And I've always loved the more holistic approach to things, treating people as a whole person, looking at their whole system as opposed to just one part of them. I also kind of at the same time went through my own journey with Lyme disease, which really opened my mind and eyes up to what functional medicine was. So that's kind of how that piece got brought in as well.
Thank goodness we have you in the space. I love that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And talk about stigma, right? The Lyme disease phenomenon as well. But so it's fascinating because when you think about mental health and from a conventional standpoint, a lot of people will know it's often a combination of medication and therapy. And that's probably even recent. Like, I mean, for a long time, it was just medication. And then finally, we're starting to get more and more support around the therapy side of things. How is your approach any different? Like, what's your overall approach to addressing mental health issues?
Yeah, definitely. So it's fascinating that you mentioned it's a more recent thing with medication and therapy, which I totally agree with. Mental health is, and psychiatry in particular, is really fascinating if you look at it over the decades. It goes through like trends almost. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the quote unquote psych ward trend that fell out. Now there's the medication trend, the therapy trend. And even before that, there was totally different trends. So I encourage anyone who's interested in the history of it to look into that.
Yeah. The lobotomy trend.
Right.
Who could
Right.
Exactly.
Electroshock therapy. Yeah.
So what I do is I practice what's called functional psychiatry. So it's really a combination of psychiatry, mental health services with functional medicine. Well, what does that mean? It's really using a combination of both conventional and alternative methods to really get to the root cause of the person's symptoms so that we can optimize overall wellness, prevent further disease, and just get them feeling as good as possible, as opposed to the more conventional method that's like, okay, you have these symptoms, let's give you a diagnosis and kind of just almost put a Band-Aid on it in some situations. So we really want to get to the root of what's causing the symptoms instead of looking at, you know, depression or anxiety is just a disease or a disorder that we're going to treat. We look at those depression, anxiety as symptoms telling us that something else is going on. And we want to figure out what's going on. How do we solve that so that the person's mental health can improve as well?
I have a follow-up to that, which I think is, so when you said root cause, the thing that popped in my head is most people, when talking about mental health, would say there is no known root cause, right? We think of like root causes being more and more accepted in medicine, but when it comes to mental health, people are like, I've just got neurotransmitters that are broken. You know, like people don't think about root cause around mental health. I don't know if you agree with that or if that's been your experience.
Definitely. I do agree with that. You know, obviously not everybody there, it's changing a little bit, which I really appreciate, but even in school, they would teach us, you know, when we learned about the medications, it's like, well, this medication treats depression. We don't really know why, but it seems to help. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we suspect that serotonin, the quote unquote happy neurotransmitter, is really the cause of depression, but that doesn't seem to affect all people. So we don't really know like why other people are depressed. So that's kind of what I learned going through conventional schooling, which was fascinating because now they're actually finding a lot of other things are the cause of depression, of anxiety. For example, depression is now being looked at as a disease of inflammation. So if you have inflammation in your body, you likely have inflammation in your brain. That can cause depression right there. I mean, think about even, you know, if looking at diet, for example, like if you are eating McDonald's 3 meals a day and that's all you eat, you're going to feel a lot worse and a lot more depressed and anxious than if you were eating, you know, a well-rounded Mediterranean diet or whatever it would be. So there's so many different reasons why you might be feeling a certain way emotionally, mentally, that we really can kind of dig into. You know, even looking at just your general lifestyle, like, are you exercising? What does mindfulness look like? Are you deficient in any nutrients that are affecting you? All those types of things are things that we look into in functional psychiatry, really looking at, you know, you as a whole person, your whole physical health as well. You know, do you have hormone issues or thyroid issues that might be causing some of those symptoms? And then treating those actual root causes.
I love that. And let's dive into some of those root causes. I mean, we're here in functional and precision medicine. Hippocrates said all disease begins in the gut. Well, we can't really verify that, but let's just say it's a good tenet nonetheless.
And also, I don't think he said it.
I don't
Is
either.
That what you mean?
Like,
we can't verify he was the one.
Any of that,
okay,
right.
Okay. But
we're going to go with it because people say it. Now, but the other piece of this is that the gut-brain axis is also very well studied. So in your practice, is that a place that you start with the gut, or do you see improvements in mood or in your patients by merely modulating the gut microbiome? Does that actually happen?
100%. I actually have a saying that says, when in doubt, start with the gut. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you don't even know what's going on, you can usually suspect that the gut has some part to play in it. When we think about the gut and our, you know, our microbiome and all of that, about 95% of our serotonin receptors, so that happy hormone, are actually in our gut. That only means like about 5% are in our brain. You know, and if our gut is off, that likely means our serotonin's off, mm-hmm. and that's going to affect how we feel mentally, emotionally. So that's one thing, you know, 70% of our immune system is in our gut. Our gut has so much to do with so many things in our body. But what I will say is most people who are struggling with their mental health, whether they feel like they have, you know, digestive issues, gut issues, they typically do. One thing I really like to do is run a stool test on my clients, which I know sounds very questionable, but we love a good stool test. but it really like, it gives you a huge picture into what is happening in the gut. So you can see so many different things, like what does your actual microbiome look like? What are the, you know, what is the good and the bad bacteria look like in your gut? How much of them do you have? Are they, you know, in the right proportions? Because that can impact a lot of things. Do you have enough digestive enzymes? You know, are you digesting your food well? Are you absorbing it well? Do you need support in that regard? Do you have any pathogens, parasites? I will say I had a client recently who had, she came to me after getting out of a psychiatric hospital for severe anxiety, insomnia, and some depression. And you know, her stay in the psychiatric hospital, she didn't really get a lot better. They kind of switched around all these medications. She still kind of felt the same when she left. And she was also having a lot of gut issues. Well, we did a stool test, came back. She had a pathogen and a parasite, both of which are known to cause her exact symptoms. Mm. So we actually, you know, resolved that, treated the pathogen, treated the parasite, and she's virtually, you know, as good as she was before she even started having any of those symptoms. So wow. I think that's just, yeah, one example of how the gut can really impact mental health. But even beyond just, you know, bugs in the gut and all of that, looking at, you know, I always look at diet and blood sugar and digestive enzymes. One of the big things I use is there's something called psychobiotics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have probiotics, which are good bacteria that live in our gut that help us out that we need. Well, there's a strain of those. It's kind of a new field being studied, but they found that certain strains of probiotics actually directly impact mental health and can be treatments for depression, anxiety, different mood disorders, and those are called psychobiotics. So, you know, using those strains if somebody needs support there can be really helpful. But I definitely really focus on the gut. I would say that's probably one of the biggest things that I look at when I first meet with someone.
I love awesome. That. And I love the word psychobiotic. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's ridiculous. Like who would have thought that these bacteria in our GI tract are like affecting our mood that right. dramatically?
Right.
I mean, being a control freak myself, I kind of don't like it. I don't like to think that they have that much power over me, but there you are.
I know they kind of, you wonder if they're like controlling everything
yes,
about it.
They are
we just little bugs, you know?
Yes, that's it.
I don't like it. But you mentioned nutrition too being an important and necessary part. You know, we think about nutrition as being related to not like B vitamin status, of course, and making neurotransmitters. So how do you make use of nutrition to help your patients, and what sort of outcomes do you see with that?
First let's touch on B vitamins, because I know you just mentioned that, but the B vitamins in particular are really critical for how our neurotransmitters work and influence our mental health. So some of you guys may have heard of the MTHFR gene. Mm-hmm. So it's this gene, and we can have a variation in it that, you know, a large number of people do. And what that gene does is it actually allows us to methylate or convert B vitamins into their methylated or usable form, essentially. So, you know, we eat an egg with B vitamins. Well, our body has to convert or methylate those B vitamins into the methylated usable form. That methylated form basically helps our brain create the neurotransmitters that affect our mood. So if we have a genetic variation in that MTHFR gene, we're not able to convert those B vitamins efficiently. And then we might actually be deficient in their usable form, and we can't make those neurotransmitters. So really making sure that we have enough B vitamins to begin with, and that we're able to convert them, or we're already taking a supplement that might already have methylated B vitamins in them, can really impact how we're able to create things like serotonin, dopamine, all of that. Looking, kind of expanding on that, a lot of other nutrient deficiencies are also really key to, in terms of causing depression, anxiety, other mental health disorders, bipolar, schizophrenia, all of the things. The ones that I find most impactful typically are vitamin D, the B vitamins, like we talked about, those omega-3s from fish oil, mm-hmm. zinc, and magnesium. So, yeah. You know, there are so many more, but those are some really key ones. And I really like looking at the NutriVal test, actually, to assess these, as well as other nutrients as well. But the NutriVal will give me an idea of what the nutrients are looking like for the particular patient, where we need to support them. And then we can add that in using nutrition. Right. So I had mentioned, you know, not just eating McDonald's every day. We need to focus on well-rounded nutrition. But even more than that, like pinpointing what nutrient deficiencies does somebody have and how can we add in foods or, you know, different things into our diet so that we can really support those.
Yeah. I love it. Zinc and magnesium appear to come up just about every single disorder that we think about.
I guess they're important.
But I want to take diet just one step further. I mean, you're in functional medicine. We're in personalized medicine. There are diet camps out there, and we've had every expert of every diet camp on the show. And at the end of the day, we all go, what are we supposed to eat now? But as it relates to the brain, right? Anecdotally, we hear a lot about the ketogenic diet profoundly changing the brain and things like seizure disorders or changing the lives of patients with mental illness. Do you use that, or how would you consider using that?
Yeah, so I totally understand what you mean by there's 100 different diets and there, you know, there's always a new one. Someone told me today, you know, we're not supposed to eat raw kale anymore. I'm like, I just had a raw kale salad. Like,
nope. What did you do? Why did you eat that salad?
I know. I'm like, tomorrow, who knows what it'll be. Right. But that being said, what I kind of take away from all of these diets is that there's really no one size fits all, which goes along with our personalized functional medicine, right? Mm-hmm. So the ketogenic diet in particular can be really helpful for certain people. Now, it's not for everybody, as most diets aren't. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yes, if you have seizures, even it's been shown to be really effective in like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. You know, somebody who might be having hallucinations or delusions, it can be really helpful there. What I will say about the ketogenic diet, so I use it in a very particular way. And I really suggest that people who are wanting to start it work with a, you know, dietitian, a different provider who's well versed in it so that they can do it in a healthy, effective way. Some people think it just means, okay, all I'm going to do is eat a lot of fat, cut out all carbs. You know, that means no vegetables and I can eat whatever fat I want. Mm-hmm. And then they end up, you know, a few months from now having really high cholesterol, their guts all messed up, all these other side effects, and they don't actually feel better. Mm-hmm. Well, what the ketogenic diet is actually focusing more on the healthy fat. So we want to think about things like, you know, coconut oil, avocado oil, olive oil, things like that. You know, eating a lot of salmon, avocados, nuts in moderation, as opposed to, you know, some of the more processed inflammatory fats. Mm-hmm. And then also including vegetables and those types of non-starchy carbs, because those are really key for increasing antioxidants, getting in enough fiber. So we really can't leave that out. When we do that, that decreases inflammation in our brain and our body. And I think that's a big part of the driver of how the ketogenic diet helps. Yeah. The ketogenic diet also puts us in a state of ketosis, which allows for our cells to improve our cellular health in a way. And that also can be part of the support there. But you definitely want to make sure that you're monitoring different labs if you're doing that, checking cholesterol, you know, full lipid panel to make sure that you are doing it in a correct way and that your body is tolerating it well, as well as just monitoring symptoms and making sure that it actually is helping in the way it's supposed to.
Sure.
Yeah. Dirty keto is what they call that. People just eat whatever they want. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to do because bacon is so delicious.
I know.
So one of the things too about diet that I was just wondering is when I think about when I think about neurotransmitters, I think a lot about amino acids, and maybe that's because I've taken things like you know, tyrosine and amino acid precursors to help. Neurotransmitter precursors. I'm not speaking very well today. But I guess my question was, when it comes to something like protein, do you find that that's an important part of the dietary strategy? Or is there some other key part of the dietary strategy you find really, really important for people with mental health issues?
Protein and healthy fat. So actually, when I, you know, advise majority of my clients on improving their diet, what we're really looking at is improving blood sugar, which the keto diet does, Mediterranean diet does, all of those good diets we hear out there. But when I, you know, there people will be like, well, how do I improve my blood sugar? What does that mean? And I always tell them, you know, there are three things I really want you to think about when you're having a meal or a snack. And one is protein. So, you know, I always say aim for more protein than you think that you need. Yeah. You know, essentially we want to try to get about 30 grams of protein each meal, which is really hard to do, but at least setting that goal, we can kind of get a little bit higher than we probably would have before. You know, so protein, healthy fats, thinking about, you know, that those things I mentioned, salmon, avocado, olive oil, and then fiber in the form of non-starchy vegetables. And you really want a variety of colors there. But if you get enough protein, healthy fat, and fiber in your diet, that will help balance blood sugar. It will help you create from the protein, the amino acids from the protein, like you mentioned, you know, create neurotransmitters, and improve your mood, improve your emotions, your whole physical health as well. So I really kind of, you know, following more of that Mediterranean diet, is really what I suggest a lot of the time, because it has that higher need of protein, of healthy fat and fiber.
Yeah.
When you're managing people from a psychiatric perspective and managing medications, how much do you ever find that you're having to maybe alter dosages when, as people's overall health are improving? Do you have to do that fairly often?
Yeah, I would say so. Psychiatric medications are a little bit different than, you know, thyroid medication, blood sugar medications, right? Where you're really trying to get, you know, you take a blood sugar medication, or sorry, not a blood sugar, blood pressure medication. Uh-huh. I'm having trouble talking today too.
It's contagious.
But a blood sugar, or oh my gosh, a blood pressure medication. And, you know, if you take too much, your blood pressure drops too much. If you don't take enough and you need it, your blood pressure might raise too much. Mm-hmm. Same thing with thyroid. Well, mental health medications are a little bit different. You know, if you are on a higher dose of an antidepressant, if, you know, it's not like at some point, typically, unless you have something like bipolar disorder, you don't typically get like too happy from it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I will say I do have a lot of people come to me wanting to come down on medications or wanting to come off of medications. And so what we do is optimize their diet, optimize their lifestyle, their overall health, so that their body is in balance and they feel stable enough to not rely on the medication. Same thing with, you know, even if they don't come wanting to come off of the medications, a lot of times they start feeling so much better just from improving their overall health, and nutrition and whatnot, that they're like, you know, I feel like I might want to try to decrease this, or I might not need this anymore. You know, feel better than I have in years. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of times, you know, I think there's definitely a time and a place for, antidepressants, different medications, and that I, you know, fully support that. And there's no shame in taking any medication in that sense. But, you know, I think a lot of times some people might be put on them who really, you know, might not need them as much. They might just need to work on a different part of their lifestyle. So once we do that, then they can really get to the root of what was causing the depression or the anxiety and not need the medication as much.
Yeah. I want to piggyback on what you just said, Everest, because this whole podcast, we've been talking about diet and lifestyle changes, and we know that it does play a huge role in helping these patients. But clearly, that's hard, right? Mm-hmm. Lifestyle change is very, very difficult. And if you have a patient who's depressed, that's a tough ask to make these huge changes.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the nutrient deficiencies in the McDonald's. It's sort of like somebody who's depressed, it's like it's hard to I'm going to stop eating McDonald's because it's already a feed-forward cycle, you know?
Correct. And so with that, how do you manage or coach this for your patients to make these diet and lifestyle changes?
That's a really good question. So this is something that I work on all the time, mm-hmm. Because it definitely is probably one of the most challenging parts of the job, right?
Right.
You know, one of the key symptoms of depression often is low motivation. Mm-hmm. So you have someone with low motivation who it's really hard for them to even get to the grocery store to get food to cook, or, you know, feeling so down that, you know, it's too much energy or takes too much energy to even get to the gym. So my philosophy is really making small changes that are sustainable versus, you know, having someone and being like, okay, you need to do a full elimination diet. You know, you've been eating McDonald's three meals a day. We're going to go into a full elimination diet. You're going to start exercising 5 days a week. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
So working with the particular client, you know, giving them different options, coaching them through different things that we could start with and seeing what actually works for them. You know, so asking the questions of like, what do you think is doable or what would be a good goal for you this week? And, you know, let's follow up even next week or the week after and really check in. My practice, I feel very fortunate. It's almost like a concierge practice without the concierge membership fee. But I like to try to get people in when needed. So, you know, my appointments are a little bit longer and I try, you know, if someone's like, well, I want to meet weekly while I'm working on these things to really follow up, hold myself accountable. I try to work to get them in that sense versus being like, okay, let's do this. I'll see you in 6 months. Because likelihood is they're, you know, in 6 months, that's not going to have happened. And then we're back in square one.
Yeah.
I actually am about to start, hopefully, fingers crossed, working with a health coach who can help follow through with some of these things as well. Because I do think that, you know, the support, the one-on-one support for some of these people can be really helpful. Just, you know, even myself, I think if I know somebody is there encouraging me to make a change, I'm much more likely to do it than when it's just, you know, me by myself.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just going to give a personal antidote here. I have no health problems. I'm fairly healthy, but Michael knows I see a health coach every week or every other week just for that exact reason, to keep me on track with diet and exercise and mood. So it is impactful. So that's a very important piece of this accountability, I would say.
Nice. Yeah. I was going to ask one question too on the kind of the therapy counseling landscape, because there's so much out there these days for people who are interested in counseling. And so I was just curious, you know, from your perspective, is there kind of like a few methods that you prefer, whether it's mindfulness or CBT or anything else for, you know, specific mental health conditions?
Yeah, good question. There is a lot out there. Again, I really tailor it to each client. I think that's a big part of this, you know, personalized functional medicine is not, there's not a one size fits all. You know, so if somebody is really struggling with a lot of trauma from their past, you know, I really want them to see a trauma specialized therapist, maybe do some EMDR, which is a technique that can really help people process trauma. If, you know, somebody is working more on reducing just, you know, racing thoughts, anxiety, I might go more the CBT route. If somebody is struggling more with some personality symptoms or, you know, even self-esteem or mood swings, we might go towards the DBT route. So finding the correct and right therapist for that particular client. That being said, I do encourage mindfulness for everybody. So working on figuring out what mindfulness will look like for them. You know, it's not meditation for everybody. That's not what everybody is going to do. So figuring out, you know, is it a daily walk? Is it, you know, just sitting quietly, listening to music, whatever it may be, figuring out what a mindfulness practice might look like for that client, and helping them implement that while going to therapy as well. And then the other big thing with therapy, I'll say, is it's all about the relationship with the therapist. So, you know, who might be a good therapist for me might not be a good therapist for either of you guys, right? Just because of who we connect with, who we trust, who we, you know, quote unquote, vibe with in that way. So, you know, trying to pair people with therapists who might match their personality is also pretty key and important.
All right. You've convinced us. The Everest Goldstein approach to mental health is the best out there. So obviously there's going to be listeners out there who may want to connect with you or perhaps work with you. Where do people find you?
Yeah. So you can all find me on, I do have an Instagram. It's Wellness with Everest. I also have a website, everestpsychandwellness.com. hopefully adding more to all of that soon. So just follow along on Instagram or my website, and I will keep you guys up to date on everything. But would love to, you know, have any of you guys that have questions or just want to chat, reach out. I love connecting with different listeners, and I've had so much fun doing this.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're so grateful that you spent time and gave all this amazing information. I'm sure you've helped a ton of people just in this conversation.
Help me.
I know. Michael loves this.
I do.
I know. But so with that, we're so glad we have you. But you've listened to the show, Everest. You know what's coming next. We have one last question that I'm going to kick to Michael Chapman.
We got a question called the Fireball. It's supposed to be a ridiculous, goofy question. And I was thinking about this. You were mentioning mindfulness. And I was thinking of like imagery as well, and imagery therapy. And your name being Everest got me to nature. So here's my question. If you think across the different landscapes of this planet, whether it's mountains or the sea or the desert of the Southwest or what have you, what's the most beautiful landscape?
Hmm.
Okay, well, obviously Mount Everest, first of all.
Well done.
But well besides done. That, we were just talking about, so Michael, well, both of you guys actually live in Asheville, yep. which is really close to where my dad is from, which is East Tennessee, in the Smoky Appalachian Mountains. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm a little biased, but I really think that's the prettiest place that I've been to, at least in this country.
We did it, Patty.
We agree.
We made it to the prettiest place in the whole planet.
There you go. Everyone go visit them in Asheville.
That's right.
Patty and Michael are waiting
That's
for you.
Right. Well, Everest, we can't thank you enough. You are a blast. We're definitely going to have you back.
This was fun. Thank you.
So thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Thank you, guys. So good chatting.
You think Hippocrates is rolling over in his grave?
I don't know.
That we were questioning whether he said that.
Dude, I don't know. But everyone in functional and personalized medicine says that same tenet. It's a good tenet. And we all say, oh, Hippocrates once said bloppity blop. But I really have independently researched this.
I've been thinking about this, too. Because if all diseases begin in the gut, I think, really, if we were to take even a bigger step root cause of that, it's like all diseases start with what you put in your face.
Correct. Correct.
Right.
It's really not what you eat. It's what you, well, no, because it is what you eat.
Look.
Because people then say, listen, here's the other tenet.
You are what you eat.
You are what you eat. But then some people say, but it's not what you eat. It's what you digest and absorb. But unless you put it in your face, to your point, it starts with the face.
Yeah. All diseases start with your face. Next time on the Lab Report, we're going to bring back the multi-omics.
Yay, that means we're bringing back the wheel.
Let's talk some SNPs and risk predisposition.
Love it.
Oh, yeah.
You've been listening to the Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net.
All right, so they're doing all these reboots of these movies.
Which one are you specifically talking about? They've been doing reboots for quite a long time.
I know. Yeah. It's because we don't have any new ideas
anymore. Nothing new under the sun.
And so, Beetlejuice.
Ugh.
What are your thoughts?
Dude, that is a fantastic movie that should remain untouched. And I know it's one of your favorite movies.
Yeah.
And it was Jason's favorite movie.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts? I feel like, stop.
Just so I am normally with you.
Yeah.
I saw the preview. I'm kind of excited.
Oh, come on.
Mostly because of the cast. So I think there's a possibility that this gets done really well.
Hmm.
But in general, I'm with you. I think the reboot thing has got
enough
to stop.
Enough.
And on that note, the immediate following trailer was Twisters.
Come on.
I know, right? And like they literally, it looks exactly like the original.
Come on. Bill Paxton, didn't he die?
He did.
So who's in it?
I don't know. Some guy who looks like Bill Paxton.
So remember we have the Paxton-Pullman conversation all the time.
Yes, yes.
Dermot Mulroney and
Dylan. I'm not going to lie. I'm still going to see that movie.
Because
it's freaking tornadoes. I mean, come on.
Wait.